to Straight Talk with MJ. I am your host, Michelle Jeanette, and it's May the 23rd. I'm still coming to you from the great state of Texas, but not for much longer. And believe it or not, this is the third time I have sat down to try to record this podcast. We are in a small hotel room, and it's, you know, things happen. The first time, my husband's phone rang. The second time, the dog had to go out. So, hopefully this time it'll work through. If you hear strange noises in the background, typing, or the dog getting a drink or something like that, yeah, we're just in the same room. So today's episode, I'm not sure of the title yet, I'm still working on that, but it has to do with truth. And that's always been my motto, truth. And there was a lot to say, a lot I had to get out and formulate and put in order and make sure I didn't forget anything. So I did something a little different. I typed it out. And today I'm just going to read you my thoughts. And not just thoughts, but things that have happened over the last few years, but specifically the last year and a half, and really having to do with truth, especially in our society. And so I'm just going to read this out to you. And at the end, of course, I will have a little bit of history. And, you know, that always kind of hopefully relates, but sometimes it's just great American history stories. So just sit back. I hope this will all come together and you'll get the big picture. And that's kind of what I'm trying to do, is give you a big picture. Not nearly going into detail on these issues like they could be. I'm just touching on them. There's so much to go into, especially when it has to do with COVID. There's just a lot to be able to talk about. So first, I'm just going to read this to you and check my podcast thing here. Yep, good to go. So just sit back, listen, and hopefully this resonates with you. So I learned something as I was hosting a Constitution class this week. It's quite interesting. Do you know the average length of a constitution in, like, any country? The average length that a constitution lasts in the 5,600 years of recorded history, the average length of a constitution is 17 years. 17 years. This year, America will celebrate 245 years with the same original constitution. That is amazing. That is a world record. It is a miracle. Now, it has had its troubles and had times of extreme peril, but we have prevailed. And how and why and what are those ingredients that make up that constitution that can stand the test of time? We are now, because now we're on the edge of breaking that streak. It's right before us. So you may be like me and remember some of what you learned in school as a kid about America. We learned about Columbus, the Pilgrims, the Civil War, World War II. We grew up watching things like Schoolhouse Rock and learned how a bill made its way through Congress to become law. But not many of us really learned about our most supreme document, the Constitution. And very few of our learning institutions even teach our true history today, let alone the Constitution. Heck, even law schools today don't even study the founding documents. They just teach Supreme Court cases for the most part, except for maybe like Hillsdale College. They're very good. Nearly half of our congressmen and women don't even know the founding documents, what it says. When Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was elected 3 years ago, she didn't even know the three branches of government. Do you know the three branches of government? Do you know what the First Amendment says? There's five things, all right? So that's, you know, interesting. So how are these, quote, uneducated people getting elected? Now, obviously, they're educated, but they're not really educated in the Constitution. Well, that's because the voters are not educated in the Constitution. So I was reading a book by a pastor, and he said that what tees you off or what peeves you or I guess, get you upset or whatever. Maybe not. Or what's your passion? Might be where God wants to use you. And for example, I love the verse in Micah 6:8 that says, "He has told you, O man, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you, but to do justice, to love mercy or kindness, and to walk humbly with your God." So when people spread lies or treat others wrong, like bullying or something like that, that tees me off. Like golf, tees me off. I love truth and justice, and I have had to learn, you know, especially in the last few years, I've had to learn to season that with mercy and kindness. I especially was teed off every time I would hear lies coming from the mouths of those in the media. Lies about our last president, lies about our country's founding and how it was supposedly established on the backs of slaves and how racist and evil it is. It just perpetuates over and over. We used to be able to mostly trust what the media told us in the news, but with all the lies, I felt like I really wanted to help spread truth. So I felt God leading me to start the podcast specifically for Christians because I knew it was up to us to arm ourselves with the truth so we could stand up for what was right. So I work very hard to bring you the truth. That's one reason why I named this podcast Straight Talk with MJ. Straight talk. But truth has been swallowed up by the lies of the media and too many of our politicians. Especially the last 5 years, we have been witness to just how devious the media has become and the lengths they will go to in order to push their agenda and suppress the truth. Year after year, they continue to promote lies and silence the truth. One of the biggest lies, until last year, was that Trump colluded with Russia to do what? Do y'all remember? It's kind of far back, like 5 years ago. He colluded with Russia to steal the election from Hillary. They never accepted the fact that Trump won. Hello? What are we going through right now? Even with machines to help, too many people showed up in 2016 to vote for Trump, and they lost. Hillary was supposed to be the icing on the cake of Obama's 8 years of, quote, fundamentally transforming America, end quote. And he seems to have almost achieved that goal. She was going to put the final nail in the coffin in forever changing this great republic. So they protested the 2016 election results. If you remember that day, violent Antifa mobs were in D.C. burning and destroying everything. And even Lance Wallnau's limo was burned on fire, caught on fire. So it's, you know, it started with way back then, if you remember that far back. They weaponized the FBI and made up a fake dossier, spied on the Trump campaign and then his presidency. They lied about and framed General Flynn because he knew too much and he had opposed Obama's policies on Islamic terrorism. They spent 2 years, upwards of $30 million, hundreds of FBI agents, thousands of documents, tons of witnesses, and a special prosecution. What was the result of all of that? Trump never colluded with Russia. Yep. Then Senator Kamala Harris, who's now the VP, was part of the effort to impeach Trump because he talked with the leader of the Ukraine on a phone call about Hunter Biden's ties to the Ukraine energy company Burisma. That was all made up, that he broke some kind of law, and the media again pushed lies on the American public. Right before the election last year, Hillary even told Joe Biden in an interview to never concede if Trump should win. She said, quote, "I think this is going to drag out, and eventually I do believe Biden will win if we don't give an inch," end quote. For the whole 4 years of Trump's four-year term, the media was the mouthpiece of all the lies and helped push the Democrats' agenda to get rid of Trump in any way possible. So for years, we have been subjected to lie after lie after lie. And that brings me to last year, 2020. What a year. We had this little thing called COVID hit our shores. Ugh, that's a whole other subject. In keeping with the mantra of Obama's one of his senior advisors, David Axelrod, never let a good crisis go to waste, the Democrats wasted no time in weaponizing the virus, and the media was right there to help them. We were told this was a novel virus, and so of course we all complied when they said we had to close down, lock down, stay at home for 15 days to flatten the curve so our hospitals wouldn't be overwhelmed with COVID patients. Yes, we were all on board with that. That makes sense, right? We didn't think we knew what this virus was. Trump quickly went to work addressing the virus. The Army set up a field hospital in New York. Samaritan's Purse set up a field hospital in New York. The Navy deployed two of its hospital ships, one to New York, one to LA. We were told over 2 million people here in the U.S. were expected to die and tens of millions would get sick. But neither ship was used. Samaritan's Purse only treated under 200 patients at their tent hospital, and very few hospitals in across the country were truly overrun with COVID patients. In fact, many hospital workers were sent home, and hospitals began to suffer economically due to the fact that no elective surgeries or other treatments were being done. The Democrats and the media did a great job of spreading enormous fear over this virus. The narrative changed from flatten the curve to stop the spread of the virus, which is like changing the rules in the middle of a game. The lockdowns continued for weeks and turned into months. At first, we were told masks were not needed. Then the CDC changed its mind and said masks were very necessary in stopping the spread. We were told that asymptomatic people were the worst because they could spread the virus and not even know it. States implemented severe closures. Schools and small businesses were told to close or face fines and even jail time, and people were arrested. And for the first time in the history of our great constitutional republic, churches were told by the government to shut their doors. We were told that buildings like churches could be super spreaders of the virus, yet Walmart, grocery stores, Home Depot, Lowe's, and other places, bars, they were allowed to stay open, right? Loved ones were kept away from their elderly parents for months for fear of spreading the virus. Yes, they were the most vulnerable. So why were nursing homes forced to accept COVID patients in states like New York and Michigan? Thousands of elderly died because of that evil policy. To this day, nobody has been held responsible for these atrocious actions, and thousands of elderly died alone. It's disgraceful, it's evil, it's criminal. Many Americans began to wake up to the dictatorial hand they had come under in some states and started to go out and protest the lockdowns. They also were called super spreaders and hateful because they didn't care that they were harming others by not wanting to wear a mask or stay locked in their homes. The media hated on them day after day. Then the killing of George Floyd happened. Remember the mantra. This crisis was definitely not wasted. It was used to the benefit of the Marxist group BLM and Antifa. There were riots in big cities all across the country. Thousands of small businesses, many owned by minorities in their own communities, were destroyed. Hundreds of cops injured, dozens killed, $2 billion in property damage done. Portland and Seattle had their government buildings and police precincts taken over by these violent activists, some of whom were paid to instigate the violence. The media tried to lie to us and tell us that they were peaceful protests. Meanwhile, while buildings were burning behind them, as they reported to us on TV, Kamala Harris and Hollywood stars funded accounts to bail out the violent activists within hours of getting arrested so they could go on and do more damage. We watched as BLM attacked DC and even tried to burn down a historic church. Trump tried to get the National Guard in there, but was denied, totally denied. The DC mayor and Democrats all stood in solidarity with these violent activists. They all called for defunding the police. But despite all the lies in trying to minimize the optics of the violence, public opinion was turning on them. It was only a few months before the election, and polls were showing that people were moving to Trump's team because they were tired of the lawlessness and the attacks on our law enforcement. So guess what? The violence calmed down. You gotta wonder why. Because it wasn't organic. It was orchestrated and funded by radical leftist groups who hate this country. Meanwhile, Fauci and the media kept the fear going by saying there was going to be a massive spike in cases in the fall of 2020, especially in November. How convenient, right around election time. Yeah, COVID itself and the truth around COVID is a whole other subject, and I'll have to do a whole other podcast on that one. So, something unprecedented happened. Swing states like Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Arizona, Georgia, Pennsylvania circumvented the Constitution and state legislatures and changed election procedures, all in the name of safety from a virus. With the help of people like Stacey Abrams in Georgia and other groups, they pushed for massive mail-in voting. They pushed this lie that those who advocated for voter ID were racist and were suppressing minority votes. We know that is a big lie. Abrams skirted around election laws and worked at ballot harvesting thousands of new voters in Georgia. People were paid to collect voter registrations and help fill them out for individuals. Each state had millions of people vote by mail in the 2020 election. Many countries around the world don't allow mail-in voting. They know it's too easy to tamper with ballots and steal elections. But the media and the Democrats kept pushing the lies about how deadly COVID was, and the people stayed home in fear. And again, the real COVID numbers is a whole other story, and I will have to do another podcast on that. Election night came, and it was pretty clear that Trump was going to win, at least until 10 or 11 p.m. But something was off. Here's a question for you. If you can answer it, shoot me an email. Why did Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Georgia, Nevada, and North Carolina all stop the vote count at around the same time? That had never happened before. Just stop counting. So I want to tell you, here's a quick facts here. So just some anomalies that happened, just really quick. At least double the number of blacks voted for Trump in 2020 than in 2016, because their unemployment had been the best in 50 years and they had more money in their pockets. At least 40% more Hispanics voted for Trump in 2020 than in 2016, and more Jews voted for Trump in 2020. Of course, Trump was pro-life, and he was the first president that didn't get us in a new ground conflict. And then you have the thought of the bellwether counties. The bellwether counties, there are 19 of them, and they're spread out all over the U.S. And history goes that if you win the bellwether counties and you win states like Ohio and Florida, you're going to win, right? So Trump won 18 out of 19 of the bellwether counties, and he won Florida. It's pretty clear. By a pretty good amount, he won Florida. So it's just some really strange things that happened that night that cannot be explained as to why they happened, and there's no answers to it. So we still haven't gotten answers. So the evidence was overwhelming that the election had been tampered with and even stolen. And if you sat like I did and watched hours of eyewitnesses' accounts, you would know there was something wrong. Something was not right. Trump supporters saw the truth. They saw the evidence. They saw what happened. They listened to the accounts. They listened to the state hearings. And guess what happened? Trump supporters started their own rallies. This was after the election. So city after city and town after town and states across the nation, thousands and thousands of people rallied for election integrity. They were exercising their First Amendment rights to peacefully assemble and to petition for a redress of their grievances. There were boat rallies with hundreds of boats. There were caravans with miles and miles of cars. I think one in Arizona or New Mexico was like 90 miles long. There was a big rally in D.C. in mid-November. My husband and I went to that one. We had never been to D.C. together and saw this as an opportunity to unite with others and make our peaceful voices heard. Hundreds of thousands of people showed up at that rally. Then there was a rally in December in D.C. We went to that one also. Not as many showed up, but there were still tens of thousands of people and speakers. Each time we went, we listened to speakers, and we got to walk around, and actually one of the rallies, we just toured some of the monuments. It was pretty cool. Trump even did a flyover in Marine One. He was amazed at how many people showed up, and each rally was peaceful all across the country. All the rallies, the Trump rallies, not only were peaceful, but they were like full of energy and life. and there was no violence in these rallies, except at each rally in D.C. that we went to, violent groups like BLM and Antifa would show up after the sun went down. They attacked Trump supporters as they walked back to their cars or hotels. There were many videos of Trump supporters being physically attacked and harassed. And Trump supporters across the nation still marched in peace to speak their minds. Day after day and week after week, more and more evidence and eyewitnesses came forward to tell about the election fraud that they saw. But every single media outlet, Democrat and Republicans, kept calling us crazy. They said that Trump supporters should just accept the loss, that they couldn't accept that Trump had lost. All right, that's really funny. After they had spent the 4 years not accepting the 2016 results, they also told us this was the most free and fair election in history. Right. Then came January 6th. A rally had been planned for a few weeks by Ari Alexander with Stop the Steal group. Several other groups were also going to meet in D.C. Many Christian groups gathered. Some of them even gathered on January 5th. There was a lot of prayer, a lot of Christian groups there, people of all walks of life. There were almost a million people that showed up on January 6th. And yes, my husband and I were there. If the first thing that comes to your mind when I said that is, oh my gosh, you're a domestic terrorist or insurrectionist and shame on you, I can't believe you did that, then maybe it's time you stop listening to the media. That is a prime example of how the media's lies are working, if that's the thoughts that come through your mind. That day is another example of how the radicals in Congress and their media minions took advantage of a situation and ran with a fake narrative. They lied about what Trump said, that he had incited violence. So they pushed their agenda forward to get rid of him and tarnish his name. They quickly started the lie that this was planned and armed insurrection by a million Trump supporters who had believed a big lie that the election had been stolen, which doesn't that contradict their narrative that Trump had incited the violence? Which one is it? That he incited the violence that day, or that it was pre-planned and this was an armed insurrection? The truth? Storming the Capitol was the very last thing Trump wanted. You know why? Because he was finally getting his day in front of all America, and he would be able to bring the receipts for that indeed the election had been stolen. He was gonna finally get that day. Because those who said, well, the courts have all rejected this and they said that there is no evidence, that's a lie in itself, because the courts never listened to the evidence. They all rejected it on technicalities. So no court ever heard the evidence. Again, lies. So more recently, and then Biden and the media are claiming that January 6th was the most deadly attack on our democracy since the Civil War, or actually they had to change that to the 1812, War of 1812. Again, massive lies. I want you to hear this example of some of the lies. It's quite incredible. And I want you to hear the narrative of the media. All right? This is their narrative.
Most violent and destructive assault on the Capitol, breaching of the Capitol since the War of 1812.
The U.S. Capitol suffered its worst security breach since the War of 1812.
Nobody's attacked Congress since 1812.
It was the worst attack on the Capitol since the War of 1812.
Talk about talking points. Talking points that are wrong, by the way. Yeah, January 6th was a bad day. Remember, a Trump supporter, an unarmed Trump supporter, Ashley Babbitt, was killed that day. But the worst day since 1812? Not true. Plenty of bad things happened at the Capitol over the years. I'm going to pick one of them just for starters right now. In 1954, five members of Congress were shot inside the House of Representatives. They were shot by a Puerto Rican national, a terrorist, inside the House of Representatives. Shot from the gallery, right there at the top. Those are the trajectories. It was incredible, yet also incredible, the fake news's distortions and lies about January 6th. I'd like to bring in our panel, Craig Shirley, presidential historian, Reagan biographer, welcome back, and Doug Weed, presidential historian, former advisor to President George H.W. Bush. Welcome, gentlemen. Craig, the mainstream media, They have very little sense of history, and this is kind of a no-brainer. I mean, when they say that, it's over the top and wrong.
Yeah, absolutely, Greg. They all got the same memo, all repeating the same lie. As a matter of fact, there have been many attacks at the U.S. Capitol over the years, not just the British sacking of the Capitol in the War of 1812, but, for instance, there were 70-some attacks in the years leading up to the Civil War on members of Congress over the issue of slavery. There was the Weather Underground detonated a bomb which caused damage in 1970. So there have been many, many attacks on the U.S. Capitol. And by the way, if they're going to do a commission on this event, then they should do it and expand it to include all political violence, including that caused by BLM and Antifa, and call it the Commission on Political Violence and investigate why $1 or $2 billion worth of damage was caused in American cities by liberal activists.
So, see that? They lied to you again. Wow, shocker. So they weaponized, again, they weaponized the FBI. Remember I told you they weaponized it in spying on Trump? So they weaponized the FBI. Hundreds of Trump supporters were arrested. Maybe some of them went a little overboard, but most Trump supporters I had ever seen at all the rallies we attended were peaceful and very, very respectful to the law enforcement. We personally thanked many of them who were guarding this D.C. street each time we were there, and I saw others doing the same thing. The FBI, this is just after January 6th, the FBI has raided homes, many homes, of MAGA patriots in dramatic fashion, like you would see in a movie where they were going after some drug lord or human trafficking ring. No, these were ordinary, hardworking, and law-abiding citizens who did not have criminal records. But SWAT teams and tanks were used to arrest them. Dozens, to this day, are sitting in the D.C. jail, no bail, solitary confinement, no showers, no access to family or lawyers, and several of them have been physically beaten and abused by D.C. jail guards. Talk about violating the constitutional rights. What were their crimes? The toughest charge so far has amounted to like trespassing or disrupting a government meeting. No firearms were found on any Trump supporter. None, zip, zero, nada. They also pushed the lie that it was deadly because 5 people died. They never tell you how, except for Officer Sicknick. They pushed a huge lie that crazy violent Trump supporters had bludgeoned Sicknick to death with a fire extinguisher. That was a big fat lie. It took 3 months for the medical examiners to release his report. I don't know why, who knows why, but it showed that Sicknick had actually died of a stroke the next day. No external injuries. And guess what? The only person murdered that day, like Greg Kelly said in that interview there, was a Trump veteran, a veteran, Air Force veteran, Trump supporter named Ashley Babbitt. An unknown security guy pulled his gun on an unarmed civilian and shot her. If you watch the video, you can see several armed police officers standing just behind her, and that guy shot right into them. And they refused to release his name, even though none of them have had any problems releasing the names of other officers in cities where maybe there was an officer that killed a black person and had been shot. Well, they're very happy to release the names of those officers. So, just telling you the truth. The question, why are they refusing to release any of the security video from inside the Capitol that day? Why keep it from the public? Is it because of videos like the one that surfaced last week that showed the Capitol Police speaking calmly with those who had entered the building? And the fact that those same people were calmly telling others to be respectful and to remain calm? That would totally expose all their lies, and they can't allow that to happen. But they continue to push the lies about insurrection. They use all of these lies to falsely accuse and impeach Trump again. They use that day to label any conservative patriot, like me, as a domestic terrorist, and now they are weaponizing even the post office and third-party groups to spy on Americans and ruin their lives. Yes, the post office. Insane. To this day, they have now established a January 6th commission, much like the 9/11 commission, to get to the bottom of things, right? Because we have so much faith that the truth will come out on that one, right? Jeez. So, why push this narrative and impeach Trump again? They had won the election. That's a great question. I mean, obviously, Biden is their puppet. I mean, unfortunately, it's very obvious he's not all there. It's really obvious. So why go through all the trouble of doing this? And why suppress any of the audits or the ballots on the voting machines that are going on right now? If they won fair and square, why do they fear the audits? Please, I want you to question that. Find the answers. The answer is they know the truth. The answer is they fear you and me. They were terrified that day, January 6th, not because they were necessarily scared, but because they saw the power of the people, which, by the way, is the way our constitutional republic works anyway. I think they have ignored that for far too long. They saw that we could see right through their lies, and it terrified them, and they didn't want to lose power. That is why they have been fighting so hard for so many years to get rid of Trump. But it is you and me they are most scared of. That is another reason they have for years targeted our schools and universities. That is why they are pushing this critical race theory and the 1619 Project. That is why they have to change our history and why they are spreading the hateful lies that America is racist and evil. They have to teach a new generation to hate their country. And their efforts are almost complete. Their last institution that they have to corrupt is the military. I grew up a proud Army brat. My father served 23 years and retired an officer. He said that most of the time the military was able to root out the bad or racist or extremist kind of people right at the beginning in boot camp. But those in power now are not satisfied with that. They know the military is a community mostly made up of strong conservatives. At least when my father was in the military, it usually ran around 70% voted conservative. So they again use the armed insurrection lie as an excuse to purge the military of this new, quote, violent extremism. They call it patriot extremism. If you believe that your government has overstepped its constitutional bounds, you're an extremist. That's their words, not mine. So they're going to try and purge violent extremism. Oh, like what, BLM and Antifa? Like the ones who've been destroying the cities for over a year now? The ones who target and harass anyone who doesn't accept their lies? The rooted in Marxism and the lie that the oppressed versus the oppressors? No, that's not who they're talking about. They're talking about patriotic Americans. If they can root out the patriots from the military, their plan will be complete. They need like-minded or molded minds that are molded to follow and do their bidding. The Secretary of Defense Austin has even mandated extremism training, and just last week, a lieutenant colonel in the Air Force or the Space Force, he's a former fighter pilot, was removed from his command because he pointed out the dangers of Marxism and how it's infiltrating the last best security for America, the military, and that it does not promote unity, it divides. So we are at a very dangerous point here, and we are at the last, America is the last place on earth where freedom and liberty are the pillars of this republic. So now, to those of you who still listen to the media, my question to you is this: why do you still listen to the same people who have been spewing lies for years? And I just laid it out. I haven't even touched the COVID lies. I said it before. That's a whole other program. I ask you to think through the things I have briefly discussed and seriously look for the truth. We have to look for the truth. There's so many lies out there. We have to look for the truth. So what can we do? Because we are certainly at a tipping point in history. What happens next? It's up to you and me. Remember, we are the people they are scared of. Why? Because once our eyes are open and we see through their lies, Americans don't usually sit back and just take tyranny. Americans have always had a spirit of independence, except we started out acknowledging our dependence on Almighty God. Where has that strong spirit gone? We need to get that spirit back. We need to get back to the foundations of not just our Constitution, but also our biblical foundations. How do we do that? Well, we start educating ourselves on the true history. We start getting involved at the local level. We run for school board. We join the local GOP party. We change it to make it more conservative. We run for commissioner. We run for state office or even federal office. But we have to start somewhere. And the most important way is also to get your kids learning the truth about our history. Just like the last couple weeks and month, the parents are starting to stand up against critical race theory being taught in our schools. States are starting to ban that theory, that mindset that is very evil and dangerous. It's wrong. It's a bunch of lies. I'll do more on that later, and that's, again, another whole episode. So that is what we have to do. So I have just finished hosting. I've got one more class tomorrow night. It's an online class on the Constitution, and it's through Patriot Academy. If you want to learn about the Constitution, I will be doing more classes. So if you are interested in that, send me an email, michelle@straighttalkwithmj.net. And when I start up a new class, I'll send you an email with a link of how you can register. I'm going to maybe do another online class, but I'm also going to do in-person class. I'm going to try to in my hometown there. So all of this is based in truth. That's what I, you know, my passion, right? The truth. And this brings me to Ephesians 6 and the armor of God. And what is the first thing that instructs us to do in the armor of God? I love this because it says, therefore take up the full armor of God so that you will be able to resist in the evil day, and having done everything, to stand firm. To me, that doesn't say we just sit back, pray that Jesus comes, and don't get involved. That says, having done everything, stand firm. What's the first thing you do? You stand firm, therefore, having girded your loins with truth. That's the first thing we have to do. We have to put on truth. We have to seek out and find it. It's out there, and there's many sources now that are popping up that are sharing the truth. You know, breastplate of righteousness, the feet with the preparation of the gospel of peace, the shield of faith, so we can extinguish all the flaming arrows of the evil one, and the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit, which is the word of God, and prayer and petitions at all times. So, the truth. So I laid out basically some overview of lies. So that's my challenge to you, is to stop listening to the lies of the media and the narrative of the media and the hysteria of the media, the mainstream media, and radical Democrats that are pushing this Marxist agenda to destroy our country, and cowardly Republicans who don't say a word and go right along with him. It, right now, it's not Democrat versus Republican. I've said this before. It's patriots versus those who want to destroy America. So I'm going to read and finish with a little history. What am I at here? Oh, pretty good, pretty good. And today's history is out of the Founders Bible. If you have that Bible, I'm going from page 1131. From Jeremiah 16. And I'm going to read this because, you know, what's in the story and the history now, or the classrooms now, is that our country is founded on white supremacy, racist white men, and it was not equality, and it was built on the backs of slaves, and all of that. So that's a lie. So I'm going to read to you something that's the truth, because we have to combat truth. I mean, lie with the truth. From the beginning, America was a haven for people from all over the world who wanted to enjoy civil and religious liberties. And significantly, the Founding Fathers understood that these two types of liberty were intimately conjoined. As affirmed by Declaration signer John Witherspoon, who said, "There is not a single instance in history in which civil liberty was lost and religious liberty preserved entire. God grant that in America true religion and civil liberty may be inseparable, and that the unjust attempts to destroy the one may in the issue tend to the support and establishment of both." Jedediah Morse agreed. He was a leading educator from the founding era who was active on the political scene throughout the revolution and held government positions afterward. He reminded citizens this: "To the kindly influence of Christianity, we owe that degree of civil freedom and political and social happiness which mankind now enjoy. In proportion as the genuine effects of Christianity are diminished in any nation, in the same proportion will the people of that nation recede from the blessings of genuine freedom and approximate the miseries of complete despotism. I hold this to be a truth confirmed by experience. If so, it follows that all efforts made to destroy the foundations of our holy religion ultimately tend to the subversion also of our political freedom and happiness. Whenever the pillars of Christianity shall be overthrown, our present republican forms of government and all the blessings which flow from them must fall with them." Have you noticed that happening lately? Citizens from across the world came to America to enjoy its unprecedented liberties and bountiful blessings. Significantly, the Bible records numerous instances of people from various nations and races traveling to where they could come together to enjoy the blessings of the Lord. The American Revolution was a perfect picture of this type of assemblage. Consider, for example, Prince Whipple, who had been a slave at the start of the Revolution but was freed by his master, Declaration signer William Whipple. Prince accompanied General George Washington in the legendary Christmas Day crossing of the Delaware. He is believed to be the man on the oar in the front of Washington's boat in the famous painting of the crossing of the Delaware. And there's a new book about all these men that helped Washington called The Indispensables. I got that book. I can't wait to read it. It's going to be a good one. After participating in the Battle of Trenton, Prince also fought in the battles of Saratoga and Rhode Island. Prince directly attended General Washington and the general staff throughout the Revolution, serving as a soldier and aide at the highest levels. Prince, who joined with others of all nationalities to fight for America's civil and religious liberties, is representative of thousands of similar black patriots who did the same, including Wentworth Cheswell. He is elected to office in New Hampshire in 1768. He made a Paul Revere-like ride to rouse the patriots. Salem Poor, a soldier in the battles of Bunker Hill, Saratoga, and Monmouth, he endured the devastating winter at Valley Forge. Peter Salem, a decorated hero at the Battle of Bunker Hill, Prince Estabrook, a black minuteman wounded at Lexington, James Armistead, America's first double spy, as well as notables Richard Allen, Lemuel Haynes, Jordan Freeman, Prince Sisson, Oliver Cromwell, and countless others. But it was not just blacks and whites who joined together in the American Revolution. Also included were Hispanics, such as Juan Morales, Bernardo de Galvez, and Francisco Saavedra. Irish, such as General Richard Montgomery and Commodore John Barry. In fact, 20 of George Washington's generals were of Irish descent. Frenchmen, such as General Lafayette and Admiral de Grasse. Polish, such as Count Pulaski. And Germans, such as Generals DeKalb and von Steuben. And many Indian tribes. And it was not just men, but also women. And I have done some stories on some of these ladies on my previous podcast, such as Captain Margaret Corbin. When her husband was wounded, she took over his cannon and fired with deadly accuracy. Seriously wounded, she was granted a lifetime military disability by the Continental Congress. Deborah Sampson posed as a man because she wanted to actually fight. She entered and served in the Continental Army. She was wounded or got a fever, what they called brain fever, and when the physician was tending her, he found out who she was, and instead of turning her in, he helped her out, got better, and then she, you know, left the military. Of course, you have Abigail Adams, which is John Adams' wife. The source of accurate military intelligence for her husband, John, in the Continental Congress, Elizabeth Lewis, a wife of the signer of the Declaration, she was made a prisoner of war for personally withstanding the British attempt to wreck her house and plunder their property. Sybil Ludington, she was a teenager that made an all-night Paul Revere-like ride of 40 miles through New York, calling patriots to arms. Mercy Otis Warren, America's first female historian, Mary Ludwig Hayes, when her husband was shot, she took his place in the artillery corps and was awarded a military pension. Lydia Dara, she saved countless American troops' lives from a surprise attack. Mary Catherine Goddard, a newspaper woman, printer, editor, and publisher, she printed the first copy of the Declaration of Independence to include the names of the signers, and throughout the Revolution, she served as postmaster of Baltimore. Anna Strong was part of the spy ring of George Washington's chief intelligence officer, Major Benjamin Talmadge, and many, many others. Furthermore, it was not just Christians, but also Jews, including Haim Salomon, who helped to secure financing for George Washington to continue the Revolution. Isaac Moses, a blockade runner. Major Benjamin Nones, a leader in the Battle of Savannah. Mordecai Sheftal, patriot leader in Georgia. And many, many others. In short, in the Revolution, the Americans were composed of black, white, red, brown, both men and women, Christian and Jew, English, Polish, Irish, French, Scotch, German, and others. But every one of them committed to securing civil and religious liberty, self-government, and the enjoyment of their unalienable rights. Decades later, John Adams remembered a time when addressing a group of Americans, recalled this. Who composed that army of fine young fellows that was then before my eyes? There were among them Roman Catholics, English Episcopalians, Scotch and American Presbyterians, Methodists, Moravians, Anabaptists, German Lutherans, German Calvinists, Universalists, Arians. The list goes on and on and on. Very few, however, of several of these species, nevertheless, all educated in the general principles of Christianity. The general principles on which the fathers achieved independence were the general principles of Christianity. Now I will avow that I then believed and now believe that those general principles of Christianity are as eternal and immutable as the existence and attributes of God. Adams saw the great diversity before him, but recognized that they had all come together in this land to partake of its Christian principles and to enjoy God's blessings. Early America certainly reflected that description in Jeremiah 16. O Lord, my strength and my stronghold and my refuge in the day of distress, to you the nations will come from the ends of the earth. So don't let them fool you and tell you this was not a nation built on Christian principles or biblical principles, or that our founders were not Christian, that they were deists and atheists. That is an outright lie. They have changed history. So we have to start educating ourselves on the truth. So again, if you're interested in taking a Constitution class with me, send me an email, michelle@straighttalkwithmj.net. You can follow me, especially on my website, straighttalkwithmj.net, on Gab, Straight Talk with MJ, and I have a Telegram page, Straight Talk with MJ. Pretty easy to find me. So hopefully I shared a little truth with you today, and what I basically wanted to challenge you to do was just to think and search for truth, because that is our calling as Christians. Our first armor, our first piece of armor is, you know, gird up your loins with truth, because that's the only way we can fight the lies, is with truth. So thanks again for listening. I'll talk to you again later, and next time it'll be from home in Tennessee. And we'll talk to y'all later.